Welcome to another episode of Hogbeat Radio. I'm your host, Mason Choate, joined by Riley McFerrin. We are from Hogbeat.com. That is HAWGBEAT.com, your rivals website covering the Arkansas Razorbacks. I'm the publisher over there. Riley is the managing editor. And we are excited to bring you another episode of this great show, previewing Arkansas versus number 4 Tennessee this weekend in Fayetteville. The Hogs, Riley, finally coming back home for just the second time in the first 6 weeks of the season. Look, I've done a few interviews with some Tennessee people this week, and everybody is surprised when you say that. I don't feel like enough people are aware that Arkansas played each of its first 5 games in a different venue. So, you know, it's just a tough deck of cards that Sam Pittman was dealt, but now you're back home. You have a prime opportunity coming off of a loss to Texas A&M to just shock the world and upset Tennessee. Now, is it going to happen? We're going to get into that. We're going to talk about that. We got some crazy numbers on Taylen Green, on the pass protection from Arkansas, and exactly how bad has it been. We got to talk about that. We're going to have facts on Tennessee, a lot of numbers. We're going to give our opinions on the game, some picks via Bet Saracen. So a packed show for you guys today. Always excited to bring you Hogbeat Radio. We're even going to talk some basketball because we got to chat with John Calipari on Tuesday. So a lot going on. Plus, Riley, the Fall Classic for baseball is on Friday. We have to talk about that too. So going to be a packed show for you here on Hogbeat Radio. But Riley, let's start real quick. Just general thoughts. Where are we at? Arkansas lost 21-17 last weekend. We were there, AT&T Stadium. Another heartbreaking loss to A&M, and now you got Tennessee coming to town. Just a rough stretch. We knew it was going to be a rough stretch, but you would have hoped that you beat A&M, and you didn't.
Yeah, so you kind of took the words right out of my mouth when you said heartbreaking loss, right? And I knew, I knew coming into this game, when you and I both picked Arkansas to win, that we'd probably doomed the Razorbacks, right? It always seems to happen that way. And, you know, what has been the storyline this entire series between Arkansas and Texas A&M in the Southwest Classic at AT&T Stadium? Texas A&M, more often than not, always seems to make one more play than the Razorbacks do. You know, we talk about the fumble that was, you know, in Arkansas's own end zone or red zone that resulted in a touchdown. We talk about, you know, the blown coverage touchdown at the beginning of the game. Yeah, I mean, Arkansas had its own, you know, third and 10 on the very first drive. Isaac Tesla, 75-yard touchdown. But it's just no matter what happens in crunch time, when it matters the most, when the lights are brightest, Texas A&M always seems to get the best of Arkansas. And, you know, a lot of it was through Taylen Green, you know, another game. You know, you talked about how we're going to talk about his struggles. Still not accurate with the ball, made some questionable decisions, had that interception. Very weird, you know, one of those throws he rolled out of the pocket, threw across his body over the middle of the field. Just one of those plays you scratch your head at. And then the protection, specifically the pass protection from the tackles, which I'm sure we'll get to in a little bit, just wasn't great. And, you know, I get, you know, Texas A&M's front seven, really, really talented, maybe one of the most talented they'll face all year, but it's not going to get any easier versus Tennessee. And so, yeah, you come back home, but Tennessee's really good. The highest ranked team as of now, I think that they'll face all season other than Texas. So it's going to be a pretty hectic matchup.
Yeah, you hit on the tackles there, and we can just go ahead and dive into this. So Sam Pittman, we talked to him on Monday, as we always do. Press conference is available on the Hogbeat YouTube. Check it out. Just go on YouTube, type in Hogbeat. I found it interesting because we have, you know, if you just watch the raw footage or the game live, you think, like, it is the tackles giving up a lot of the pressure. And if you look at the numbers on Pro Football Focus, I'm pulling it up now, pass blocking, Keyshawn Blackstock, 36.9 grade. And that's from 0 to 100. My understanding is I think you can get up to 2 points per play or two points towards your grade per play, something along the lines of that. Obviously, closer to 100 is the better. It's like a grade in school. So 36.9, not great at all. And this is not the first game that Keyshawn Blackstock has had a really bad pass blocking grade. Fernando Carmona, though, 67.1. You know, I don't think on the left side you're as worried. I don't think you're as worried about Carmona. He's a great run blocker. You know, he really hasn't been that bad in pass protection. I feel like a lot of the pressure is more coming from the right side if it is from the tackles. But Sam Pittman said something, and I don't have the exact quote in front of me, but basically he said that like the pocket is closing in from the inside too, so Talen isn't able to step up. So it's not just the tackles. It's kind of just like everything has been a struggle. You know, they're sending six guys or they're sending seven guys and Arkansas only has six to block. Like stuff like that. And they got to figure that out. I don't know if it's Talen's got to make, you know, better pre-snap recognition, pre-snap reads, calling stuff out. We know that he's been slow, you know, just on progressions and just getting the ball out in general. So all of this has led to a quarterback without confidence, which was a pretty interesting statement from Sam Pittman on Monday. Here it is.
I think we've had so many pressures that we got a lot of problems. We got a confidence problem. We have a quarterback that's not confident. There's times when he can stand in the pocket that there is one there. There's times when he stays in the pocket and he gets hit. Probably in between, and we tried a lot of quick passing game as well. But I think between that, moving the pocket and running the football, you know, the problem with that was early in the game, you know, we lost a running back early in the game. 22 was in and out of the game. R-Dub was suspended, which he's not anymore, by the way, but he was suspended.
So there you go. You know, still an issue with Jaquindon Jackson staying healthy in games. You know, A&M seemed to have a good game plan for him. What, I think 10 carries, 37 yards. So he had the touchdown, but Jaquindon Jackson was kind of shut down by A&M. You just hope that this wasn't a game where the Aggies put some film out there for other teams down the line of like, here's the game plan. Here's how you beat Talen Green. Obviously, Arkansas has to do its part to figure that out. So you're in a tough situation because your quarterback's not performing to the level that you want him to, Riley.
Yeah, I mean, how about the quote, we have a quarterback that's not confident? I mean, that surely won't add any flame to the fire about the Malachi Singleton conversation, right? I mean, surely no one's going to bring that up. Just some stats real quick. Green was 23 of 41 on throws against Texas A&M. That's 56.1%. And now since the UAPB game, which I think we can all agree, like we can't really say or count anything from that, Talen Green is 51.2% on throw since that game.
Yeah.
Not great. And here's another stat per PFF. I don't know if you were going to get to this, but Green currently is pressured on 41.5% of his dropbacks this season, which is the second highest among 27 SEC quarterbacks with at least 15 dropbacks. So getting back to the protection issues, you have a quarterback that isn't confident. That's probably why. Every time he drops back, it seems like he's getting pressured, you know, more often than not. And he's not really a quarterback. He hasn't proven, at least in the SEC, when he drops back and is getting pressured, that he can make the right read, make the right throw. I mean, since that UAPB game, he has 3 touchdowns and 5 interceptions, yeah. Right? So pretty big issue when you're about to face a Tennessee defense that, oh, by the way, ranks number one in the country in yards allowed per game.
And interestingly enough, this was per PFF, so you got to take everything from PFF with a grain of salt because some of this stuff just doesn't add up always, but it is a good tool to use. 41.7% of his snaps, you mentioned, or I think you had 41.5. See, this is the thing with PFF. The numbers are different sometimes.
They fluctuate.
So, but this, I found this interesting. When the pocket is kept clean, he's completing 60.4% of his passes, 3 touchdowns and 4 interceptions. When he's being pressured, he's completing 40% of his passes, 2 touchdowns, 1 interception. So, okay. This is where I'm like, I don't know if the numbers are adding up because I feel like at least 2 of his interceptions had to have come outside of the pocket. We know the one against A&M where he was trying to get Broden down the field. He was outside of the pocket for sure on that one. I'm trying to think back to some of his other interceptions. I know the pick 6 against Oklahoma State he was in the pocket for. The pick against UAB he was in the pocket for. Let's think back to the Auburn
game. That was a tip Was that a tip pick?
One of them. I want to say was tipped. So that's at least three. So maybe it is only one of these picks have come outside of the pocket. But that's so those. There's some more numbers there, just as far as Taylen Green goes. But I did find the quote from Sam Pittman on just the protection. So he says he thought the tackles played better than they did against Auburn. But he said a lot of times there's no place for Taylen to step up, so the pocket's getting collapsed on him, which makes you look worse at tackle. Even the last one when we fumbled the ball, I mean, Carmona had 11 yards deep. You can't ask a guy to do more than that. He flushed because the front of the pocket was coming at him, and the guy got the strip fumble. So those are the things that, like, when you're just watching either live or if you don't have all of – you know, the context of watching the game or the film back, you maybe don't pick up on that stuff. Maybe you think Carmona just got beat by his guy. But here's, you know, the career offensive line coach, and I know maybe the offensive line isn't what you want it to be under him, but he's telling you that this was not on your tackle. This was on the fact that Taylen didn't have any room in front of him to step up, so he had to be flushed. And Carmona had his guy 11 yards deep. I mean, think about 11 yards, Riley. That's a lot of yardage to be blocking a guy. So, look, we're not football experts. We're just trying to share you the message of what the head coach is saying is going on. And I feel like Sam Pittman, you know, as tough as it is, Riley, I feel like he's been pretty honest with us just about what's been happening and what's been going wrong. You get that vibe?
I do. I definitely see it, like, especially after this last game, there was a lot of football. You know, we kind of talked about it after the game, a lot of football jargon that, you know, maybe the casual viewer wouldn't understand. I didn't, you know, mostly understand half of what he was saying. But I do want to quickly point out a few things. First off, the defense played fantastic in this game up until the very end, the fourth quarter. There were a couple drives that weren't great. But as a whole, another game where, you know, the defense from Travis Williams is wasted. That happened a couple of times last season, too, on the road against SEC competition. But I want to point out a few takeaways from these PFF grades. First off, Arkansas desperately needs Shaylen Braxton back. You look at, you know, some of the backup cornerbacks that played. Keon Stewart, 44.8. Again, PFF, you know, take it with a grain of salt. It's just a tool to use. Keon Stewart, 44.7 coverage grade. And Jaheim Singletary, a 56.6 coverage grade. You would really like to have your star, you know, number one cornerback out there against an SEC team with a freshman quarterback, especially with numbers like that. Another thing, Brad Spence, huge bounce back game. You know, he's kind of struggled a little bit the last couple games. We're kind of wondering where he fit in the rotation with a guy like Steven Dix Jr. Well, he came out, he actually led the defense in overall grade with a 79.5. And according to PFF, he did not miss a single tackle. So really good number there. And then finally, and I'm sure we'll kind of talk about this, as far as that last drive goes when Texas A&M just ran straight through Arkansas's defense, I really don't know what's going on with Danny Saili. I'm not sure what the move was there, what the play was there, but he finished last on the defense with a 39.9 overall grade, and it makes sense because, like I said, Texas A&M ran straight through him in that side of the defensive line. I think Arkansas also had Charleston Collins, the freshman defensive end, in the game at the same time as him. I know Pittman or someone had talked about, you know, maybe it was Eric Gregory, had talked about how, you know, they kind of got stuck in their rotation, their defensive line rotation at the end of the game on that drive. But, I mean, still, I don't really know what's going on there.
Yeah, I'm pulling up the quote here. Pittman said, "We felt like the fresh guys were going to play better. I'll have to look at the tape to see exactly how those guys played or if we fit at linebacker, if the safeties didn't fit. But in hindsight, I wish we'd have stopped them. And we obviously felt like the guys we had in the game were capable of doing it." But, I mean, even in real time, I was telling you and Daniel, we were sitting in the press box. I was like, why is Danny Saili in on third down? Like, this is a critical third down. Sure enough, you mentioned it. They run right at him, and Le'Veon Moss just goes straight through him. You know, kind of tough when you're a 300-plus-pound guy and you let a running back who, to that point in the game, had just been shut down, run right through you. Le'Veon Moss, dude, I had it in my story. I don't know the exact number, but he had less than 20 rushing yards entering the fourth quarter, and he ends the game with a career-high rushing yards, over 100 yards. So that was tough. It was just overall just another one of those games where Arkansas finds a way to lose, and that's where you're at. But the defense, it has become a just – a consistency with this defense for some reason. And really in the past 2 years, you play a great first three quarters of football, and then they just tail off at the end of the game. And you're almost looking at games and saying, like, man, if the defense could have just held there at the end. It's hard to ask them that, though, when they've been holding all game. So it's a tough situation because they play good all game, but then it's a bend don't break defense, and then they break in the end. So that's kind of what happened. But you need more from the offense. That's the reality of the situation. And that can kind of take us into moving forward this week. So, you know, a big topic of conversation with the offense is the receiver position. And we talked about the protection, but you also got to talk about the receivers, because Taylen Green is not getting very much help from anybody not named Andrew Armstrong. And that's just the reality of it. We've talked about Tyrone Broden on this show plenty. You know, even Isaiah Satania, they keep trying to get him involved, but a lot of it is like, you know, these short, you know, little out routes, you know, on the sideline, stuff like that. But they're really banged up at the tight end position entering this game, Riley, and that concerns me, because we talked about that A&M front seven and how good they were going to be. You can make an argument that Tennessee is just as good. You mentioned how they, you know, number one scoring defense in the country. I think they have the number two total defense in the country, if I'm not mistaken, something along the lines of that. So are you worried about – I mean, we talked about the protection. Tight ends are a key part of that protection, and we're looking at – you know, they're probably not going to have Andreas Poska, which they haven't had him for at least the past two games. Most of the UAB game, I think. Maybe not. He played in that one. And then now we're talking about you might not have Luke Haz, and Ty Washington's banged up. It's they're in a predicament.
Am I worried? Even if Arkansas's tight ends were fully healthy, I'd be worried about Arkansas in this game. Okay. I mean, Pittman even said he spoke to Dave Polansky, which is the associate director of sports medicine for Arkansas, and he talked to him more in the Texas A&M game than he has apparently the entire year, more than usual, he said. You know, Luke Haz, he got hurt in this game last year against Texas A&M. It was a season-ending injury. He exited the game with a pre-existing back issue. Andre Poska, still in that concussion protocol, didn't play. Pittman said that he was doubtful for Tennessee. He's probably not going to play in that game. Ty Washington was also banged up heading into the Texas A&M game, and he got hurt, or at least he seemed like he got hurt, during the Texas A&M game again. Okay, Pittman didn't reveal the injury there. You know, we'll maybe see when the first availability report comes out tonight. And then, you know, you
which
look at the
Wednesday night, by the way. We usually record this on Thursdays, and we should also come out on Thursday. We had to record a day early, by the way. So if we sound like idiots because, like, Sam Pittman goes on the SEC teleconference and says, like, Taylen Green's out or something, then it's because we recorded before he went on the teleconference. Anyways, I'm sorry to interrupt you.
Yeah. Jalen Braxton still hurt. Pittman said, I don't feel great about Braxton. That is exactly what he said. You know, I talked about how earlier Arkansas really needs him back. Well, you know, that may not happen against Tennessee. Hudson Clark actually was a game time decision for Texas A&M. Didn't dress out. Pittman said he didn't feel real confident with Hudson Clark. He thought maybe he was maybe doing it more for the team, not himself. So he didn't want to risk, you know, putting him back in the game and getting re-hurt. And then, you know, Pittman had mentioned Rashawn DeBinion back after being suspended. So am I worried? Yes, I'm very worried. Arkansas's had protection issues. You're probably not going to have your best tight end blocker in Andreas Poska. Luke Haz has gotten better in the blocking game. You know, we'll see. He's still hurt. You know, whenever you have a back issue, I don't know how that works, but it probably doesn't help you in the blocking game. So, yeah, to answer your question, yes, I'm worried.
I have a few things to mention here. One, I feel like we need to mention that Pittman did say Keon Stewart was sick. So I don't know if you caught that. He said Keon Stewart went down. He was sick. So that, I mean, it was kind of weird that he somehow magically became sick after giving up a touchdown, but maybe he was sick before that play happened. I don't know. So that was one thing. Now at the tight end position, could we maybe see Maddox Lassiter in the game, you know, playing a decent amount of tight end, because we've seen him at fullback and he goes 100 miles an hour.
It's gonna say, man, I mean, he's first team fullback. Like, yeah, you want a guy that'll go in there and give you all the energy you need. Why not throw him at tight end?
They might have to out of necessity, especially if Luke Haz doesn't play in this game.
Are we finally gonna get the Josh Street game? Should we talk about how Josh Street coming into this game, we had a number change to 97, yes, right? Or was 96. It 96? 96.
Yeah.
Which made him, if need be, an eligible receiver. And I don't know what was going on there. You know, I thought maybe on that fake field goal that they didn't get, maybe that could have been a situation where you throw him the ball. I don't know why you would, in such a crucial situation, throw Josh Street the football, but pretty interesting. I don't know. Josh Street, isn't he like he's down the depth chart on the tight end spot. He's normally an offensive lineman, but maybe, I don't know, if you're desperate enough.
I didn't even know that this was a possibility with Josh Street until this game. And for those who aren't the diehards and who don't know who Josh Street is, he's a redshirt junior offensive lineman, 6'6", 316, out of Bentonville. He started as a walk-on, earned a scholarship last year. During fall camp, he was kind of a do-it-all guy. He's played at center a little bit. But in fall camp, we saw him at guard. We saw him at tackle for the first time that I've seen him at tackle with Arkansas. And I guess they're like, we got to find some way to get him involved, and let's put him in. He's normally in jersey number 67, and then they put him in 96. So I don't know. That was just like one of the weird pregame things that we saw and wanted to figure it out. And it was so he could be an eligible receiver. So we'll see if that happens again this weekend. All right, anything else from the A&M game that I can think of? We went through the injuries. I think we hit them all. You know, I think we can hit on the receiver position a little bit more here. So they didn't have – not that – I don't know how much they would have played, if at all, but Chauffre Brown still out at wide receiver, the transfer from South Florida. You know, he's played – when he's been healthy, they have targeted him. I want to say it was the UAB game. He had multiple catches. And then Monte Harrison, the former Major League Baseball player, he was out for this game. And so we saw the Tesla touchdown. Now we might see Tesla play a little bit more, but could it be a situation, Riley, where it's Pittman saying that a guy needs to play more, and then we're going to see, you know, Broden probably take a majority of the snaps at one of the wide receiver spots? I just think that I hate it for Tyrone Broden. I do. Because he's you want a guy to succeed, and you want to see a guy like that who has the skill set that he does to be able to fully utilize it, but he's just not, and it's putting Arkansas in tough situations, and it is contributing to the confidence issue that Pittman talked about with Talen Green. There's no way Talen's confident throwing it to five. I wouldn't be either, man. If he would just catch the ball, then that would change everything. But I think you got to try something else.
Look at you being kind of heartfelt about Tyrone Broden. You're really turning a corner. But no, I agree. I mean, look, Isaac Tesla, I mean, we were talking about it before the game. Isaac Tesla is usually good for one really important catch a game, and then maybe that's kind of it. And the like first drive, boom, 75-yard touchdown pass, and you're leading. But the rest of the game, they continued to target him, right? And he showed that he can make plays. I mean, he had over 100 yards, his highest in an Arkansas uniform. So I definitely think he's a guy that you need to keep putting emphasis on. I think, you know, when speaking to the media last night, he actually mentioned that he sees himself as a security blanket for Talen Green. It just hasn't showed yet. So, you know, I think against Tennessee, you got Andrew Armstrong locked down. Isaiah Satania, you mentioned it. The thing with Satania, you know, you hit him on these quick routes, and anytime you want him to go deep, you just don't really have the time in the pocket. You know, like we've mentioned with the protection issues, you don't have the time to hit him on those big, you know, post routes down the field. Tyrone Broden, look, I'm just not going to talk about it until he has a great game, which I know he will, by the way. Until he has a great game, I'm just gonna stop talking about him. I think you need to go to Isaac Tesla more. I was a little bit surprised we didn't see him, you know, maybe in that starting lineup. I thought they might make the move finally this week. They didn't. But I would assume, you know, coming into this game, he's going to get more first-team reps with Talen Green.
Yeah. You know, there.
Oh, actually, sorry to interrupt you. I have one quick thing I want to point out for this Texas A&M game. My MVP, I just want to give him a shout-out, Devin Bale. I mean, he led the first half between both teams in rushing yards with 25. Like, when's the last time we've seen that from a punter? And then he had that one punt. It was the most perfect punt I think I've ever seen in my entire life. He pinned the Aggies down on the 1 yard line. It like hit. I don't remember where it actually hit on the field, but it bounced sideways out of bounds on the one. So I just want to give a shout out to him. He had a pretty great game.
Yeah, great game for Devin Bale. Didn't miss a beat there at the punter position. Can't necessarily say the same about the kicker position, but I as far as wide receiver goes, last comments here. So aside from the four of Armstrong, Broden, Satania, and Tesla, we did see Jordan Anthony play 20 snaps in this game. So if you just want to wonder who is next up there, based on snap counts, it's Anthony, and then C.J. Brown got in for two snaps as well. I am a little curious, like, why they haven't even tried Davion Dozier, because he's just a practice, you know, All-American. He wins the one-on-one battles almost every time in practice, and maybe he's just a practice guy, or maybe he's just good when the media is there. I don't know, but I would be interested to see if he could get in the game at some point, but maybe they just don't feel like he gives them the best shot to win. So let's look ahead to this Tennessee team, shall we, Riley? The number four Tennessee Volunteers, they are 4-0 on the year. They have, I mean, just completely dominated everybody they have played. You know, the Oklahoma score does not tell the whole story there. Opened the season 69-3 against Chattanooga, and then they just demolished NC State at a neutral site game 51-10. That was a preseason ranked NC State team. And then 71-0 against Kent State. That game was like, what, 65-0 at halftime, something along the lines of that. And then they go on the road with College Game Day in town in Norman, Oklahoma, 25-15 against the Sooners. That game, you know, was never really close. They got up and just ran the ball. And I'm sure that was a little bit of Josh Heupel out of respect for his former program that he led to a national championship. So your 4-0 Tennessee Volunteers coming off of a bye week. Again, I mentioned it in the open. If you want to make some excuses for Arkansas, this is just completely unfair. Arkansas is getting absolutely screwed in the fact that they have had to play in five different venues to start the season, and you're telling them, hey, we need you to play this week too for the sixth week in a row. You're finally getting to play in Fayetteville for the second time in week six. And oh, by the way, the number four Tennessee Volunteers are coming in off a bye. I mean,
it's tough.
You got screwed if you're Arkansas. If you want to make an excuse if you're Sam Pittman, I will accept that one. I will accept that excuse. So it all starts with Nico. Can you pronounce it for me, Riley? I can pronounce it.
Here we go. Every single week, a name that I have to pronounce that is just, I mean, it's crazy. Hold on, let me pull it up real quick. I need to actually see it so I can enunciate it.
Dude, all right, if you're a college football fan, you should be able to pronounce this one by now.
I think it's Nico Iamaliava.
Iamaliava.
Iamaliava. Okay, Iamaliava. Okay, got it. Iamaliava,
yes. So, easy. Nico, let's everybody in your car right now on three. Let's all say it, okay? 1, 2, 3. Iamaliava. Say it, Riley.
Start from Nico. Iamaliava.
There you go. So now that you'll be prepared, that's a party trick that you can do. All your friends, when you get together to watch the game, be like, hey, pronounce his name. I can do it. Can you do it? And then when you pronounce it, everybody will think that you're the really smart guy. It was the same thing with Tua until everybody figured out how to pronounce it. Everybody will eventually be able to pronounce this name. But yeah, this kid, he is, if you just watch him play, he's the real deal. He's a former five-star. And you know, they really haven't had to use him a whole lot this year, Riley, because they've just been ahead so much that they just start running the ball. You look at his numbers on the year. This is a different game. Do you have his numbers pulled up? I think he's got he's got like 800 and something yards. But the running back, Dylan Sampson, is the guy that, you know, everybody talks about Nico, but Dylan Sampson has been just incredible this year. He's one of the top rushers in the SEC. I think JaQuinnon still leads the SEC in rushing yards, doesn't he?
He does.
Dylan Sampson, fourth in the SEC, 449 rushing yards. He does lead the conference with 10 rushing touchdowns. He's actually second in the FBS behind Ashton Jainty from Boise State, who is a freaking dude. This Tennessee offense, and then at receiver, you know, just Brew McCoy, Squirrel White, these guys are absolutely loaded at receiver. And that's talking about the offense for Josh Heupel, Riley. Like, right. Then you get to the defense, and the defense might be better.
Yeah, so real quick before we go to the defense, I do want to point something out because I did pull up Nico Iamaliava's stats. He's thrown the ball 88 times this season, okay? So that's not a lot. Talon Green alone against Texas A&M threw 41 times. So in one game, Talon Green has thrown about half of what Nico has thrown the entire year. And a big reason for that, you mentioned it, Tennessee has been up. Tennessee is one of, I think, four teams that has not trailed to their opponents the entire year. And they've played a couple good teams. They played Oklahoma, and they played NC State on the road. NC State was ranked at the time. And Tennessee, in total, between their four games, has outscored their opponents 216-28, 149-6 in the first half. That plus 188-point differential is currently the best in the country, okay? And so we talked about how, you know, Arkansas, you're finally coming home. You're playing that night game. You know, you got a stripe out, by the way. We haven't mentioned that. Arkansas is wanting to do the stripe out in the stadium. And Tennessee's coming off a bye week. And, oh, by the way, they're really freaking good. So, yeah, kind of weird with Nico. He hasn't had to throw the ball a lot, and that's why. But, yeah, kind of getting the defense. I mean, you talk about offensively, they have a really good player. Defensively, they might have one of the best players in the country, James Pierce Jr.
Who, defensive, by the way, and
pass rusher.
He hasn't had to do anything. Like, nobody on their defensive line has had to do anything. I mean, it's unreal that they haven't even had to lean on him, whereas you would hope Arkansas would lean on a guy like Landon Jackson. We didn't mention that he ended up having his breakout game against A&M, but I'll let you keep going on that Volunteer D-line.
Yeah, so, but besides James Pierce Jr., we kind of all know about him. I actually talked to our Tennessee rival site about maybe some unsung heroes, and Noah Taylor over there, the managing editor, mentioned defensive end, I think, Tyre West. I'm probably saying that wrong. It's T-Y-R-E, Tyre West, something like that.
Probably Tyree, if I had to guess.
Might be Tyree. He has 2 sacks and 3.5 TFLs on the year. Apparently, he's having a really good year. So you've got him on one side, then you've got James Pierce Jr. I think their defensive line, I can't remember where I saw it, but it's one of the best in the country, including the interior. And then, I mean, you've just got a bunch of skilled players all around, you know, the linebacker core, the secondary. I mean, Tennessee, the big reason Tennessee has made a jump from a 9-win team a year ago to a college football contender is because of that defensive jump. And so you've got a struggling offense with a struggling offensive line. You know, the protection hasn't been great. You're facing probably one of the best defensive ends you're going to see all year. It's not really a match made in heaven for the Razorbacks.
No, it's not. You know, you look at the numbers for the Volunteers. I got it mixed up. I got it backwards earlier. They're number one in the nation in total defense. They're number two in scoring defense. They're number four in passing defense, number two in rushing defense, and number one in third down defense. This is nationally. This is not SEC. This is nationally. And then offensively, they're number one in scoring offense. They're number two in total offense. They're number four in rushing offense. And then 33rd in passing offense. And that's the fact that they haven't thrown the ball at all.
This isn't like Ole Miss, who, you know, Ole Miss before that Kentucky game hadn't played anybody, right? I think they played Wake Forest, who isn't really good. Tennessee's played two good teams already. They played Oklahoma went on the road and beat Auburn, by the way, the team that Arkansas beat. And then that was even with, you know, a freshman, I think freshman quarterback, Michael Hawkins. And then they also beat NC State on the road, another pretty good team, good program. So Tennessee has proven, you know, that they've already shown that they can do it against quality competition. This isn't Ole Miss. You know, Ole Miss finally played a real opponent and then lost to Kentucky. It's going to be rough. I did actually talk to Noah, and he did say that under Josh Heupel, Tennessee's kryptonite has been road games. So I looked back since he's been hired. Tennessee is 7-7 since 2021 on the road, which I don't think is too awful. But last year they went 1-3 on the road. So, you know, we'll kind of see there, kind of an interesting note. Noah Taylor did say that he thinks this Tennessee team has shaken that persona. So we'll see. But I mean, you know, we see what happens. Upsets happen, man. It's normal.
Huh. Yeah, I don't think it's going to happen this time. But, you know, talking about just interesting numbers, you know, the last three times they've played this game, Arkansas has won. And the last time Arkansas beat a top five team at home was in 1999, that redemption is what they're calling it, the redemption game against Tennessee, 28-24. So that was the last time you did it. That was number 3 Tennessee. So we'll see if you can beat number 4 Tennessee this weekend. You know, I wanted to mention just the discrepancy in snap counts between the starting D lines. It's just unreal.
It's crazy.
The Landon Jackson, 263 snaps. That's the most of the Arkansas D linemen. You add in Eric Gregory, Cam Ball, Nico Davier, all those guys over 200 snaps on the season. James Pierce Jr. and Dominic Bailey are the two edge rushers for Tennessee. They each have 107 snaps on the year. And then they're starting D tackles, and they both have less than 100 snaps on the year. So you're saying that these guys, not only have they been able to basically rest like the second half of every game, but they also are coming off of a bye week. How much does that help you, and how much does Arkansas, you know, playing games and being physical and just like being in the middle of it, does that give you an advantage? You know, you always talk about with baseball, like you don't want to take too much time off because then you'll get like a cold bat or whatever you want to call it. Is that the case in football? Probably not as much, because Arkansas, Sam Pittman's talking about on Monday how he's concerned about how many injuries they have after a physical game against A&M. It's just that it's a tough situation. And I said on radio yesterday, Riley, with a radio station out in Tennessee, you know, everything that Arkansas does good and that you want to hang your hat on, whether it be like third down defense, third down offense, you know, passing offense, running offense, rushing defense, like Arkansas has been good at all of those. Tennessee is better in every single one of those. So,
yeah, it's interesting. Before every game, against, you know, against Auburn, against Texas A&M, we'd always talked about how on paper, Arkansas has every reason to win this game. Like, they can be in this game and win it. You look at it for Tennessee, and that is not the case, right? Another little fun fact, Tennessee has allowed just 2 30-yard-plus plays all year, which is the fewest in the SEC. What do we know about Arkansas? They're really good at getting chunk plays, right, in that Bobby Petrino offense. Just another thing, Tennessee is really good at stopping. So I think, you know, if you look at this game on paper, you'd probably expect Tennessee to win by like 50 points, even though it's at home for the Razorbacks. I get it. But I mean, man, Tennessee has everything going for it in this game. Another quick fun fact. I just want to get this fun fact out so I don't have to mention it randomly later. Tennessee does have one Arkansas native that I could find, Bentonville native wide receiver Chaz Nimrod. Some of you guys might remember him. I think he was a 4-star, maybe a former 4-star out of Bentonville. You know, Bentonville is obviously not very far away from Fayetteville. Doesn't really play a whole lot, won't factor into the game, but, you know, some Arkansas flavor, at least on Tennessee.
All right. Before we move on, let's tell everybody about hogbeat.com. Everything that we're mentioning right now is stuff that we've talked about on hogbeat.com. That is hawgbeat.com. We're on there every single day providing information to our subscribers. So we really appreciate those of you who are subscribed. If you aren't, less than $10 a month, less than $100 a year. And I always tell people, if it's something that you can't afford or you're not sure if it's something that you want to fully commit to, just let me know. If you're watching on the YouTube, our Twitters are scrolling the whole time, DM us. If you're not watching, just go to hogbeat.com. Links to our socials are there. Every story, just click it. You'll find it. And let us know. We'll get you set up, and we just want you to check out our work. We do a lot of free content on the website, so it's not something that you have to pay to be, you know, enjoying our content. You can read a lot of the free stuff that we do, but we also do a lot of premium stuff for our subscribers that is well worth your money. I promise you that you are getting your money's worth. We do a lot of good stuff, including all these pro football focus numbers. We're doing it. We also go to the baseball scrimmages. We got stats that we're providing to people. Everybody's interested on that, on top of all the inside info with recruiting and anything else you want to know about. So hogbeat.com, it is hawgbeat.com. Check us out. All right, let's move on here to our Bet Saracen picks for the week, Riley. So as we are recording this, I don't think any of the specials are up on Bet Saracen. No specials, no double R props. So on the screen, we have just the spread and the money lines. Right now, Arkansas 13.5-point underdogs to the Tennessee Volunteers. That money line is plus 400 for the Razorbacks. Riley, do you think that the 13.5 is a good line? What do you feel about that?
If I were going to put money on it. I would take Tennessee to cover personally. I do think that's a good line. I think it makes sense. Tennessee's blown out every single team. And like, you know, we've talked about it ad nauseum now, you know, on paper, this is just a terrible matchup for Arkansas. So, you know, if it were me, 13.5 point underdogs, even if it is at home, I'm taking Tennessee to cover that. You know, we'll see what happens in the game. But I think it's a pretty good line.
You know, I'm just looking at some of the player props that they have available right now. And, you know, they have a Jaquinnon Jackson rushing touchdown at +115. I mean, you're telling – I mean, he scored a touchdown in every single game this year. Don't go to the anytime touchdown because anytime is -115. So you're getting that at even odds. If you go to rushing touchdown, you can get it at plus money. I don't know why you wouldn't take that at all. I mean, if Arkansas was to score one touchdown in this game, I would, you know, guess that it would be a rushing touchdown for Jaquinnon Jackson. Do you like that one, Riley? You like that pick?
Oh, I agree. I mean, my pick of the week for our Bet Saracen story last week was Jaquinnon Jackson to get a first quarter touchdown against Texas A&M, and that's exactly what he did. So, I mean, yeah, as far as like if you're going to pick one player to score a touchdown in this game, I'm going to – if I'm telling you guys, I'd put your money on Jaquinnon Jackson. If he doesn't get it, it'll be the first time he hasn't done it in conference play. So,
yep. Taylen Green to throw an interception, -140. Worth putting some money on it, honestly, at this point. Andrew Armstrong, receiving yards, 61.5. That seems like a pretty good line. I don't know what his numbers per game this year are, but we know that he's going to get targeted enough to reach that for sure. So, just check it out, Bet Saracen. You can download the app on your phone wherever you get your apps, whether it be Apple or Google Play. Download Bet Saracen. You can only gamble on Bet Saracen if you are in the state of Arkansas, and we encourage you to please gamble responsibly. Don't bet any money that you can't afford to lose. And thank you to Bet Saracen for their partnership with us. We really enjoy them, and a lot of good stuff. As we mentioned, the specials and the player props are not up yet. Those will be up by the time that the game happens. So there will be a lot more options for you guys later on.
I do still have some picks. And okay. I just want to say shout out to myself for picking Alabama. Everyone disagreed with me. Everyone was like, oh, Riley, you're stupid. It's going to be Georgia. Nope, Alabama won.
You, and then I also but, went. But you, but when Alabama was up, you were like, you were really bragging like you knew that Alabama was going to dominate that game or something. And when Georgia came back, you were very quiet until Alabama finally won. And then you're like, oh, I knew the whole time.
I knew Alabama would win the game. And what did they do? They won the game. Okay. Now, listen, I also picked Texas Tech to beat Cincinnati. Texas Tech beat Cincinnati. And then I had one other game. What was it?
Cincinnati got screwed by some calls at the end of the game. Just saying.
Hey, man. Home field advantage, it always wins. Oh, the last game, I couldn't believe it. BYU was a road underdog at Baylor. Didn't really make any sense to me at the time. I think BYU was even a three-point underdog. BYU went and won 34-28. I think Baylor actually made that game kind of interesting at the end. So I went 3-0 on my Bet Saracen picks last week. I don't know. Maybe you should listen to me. I'm just saying. My picks this week, Missouri is a +110 moneyline underdog on the road at Texas A&M. Missouri coming off a bye week. I think Missouri is still in the top 10. You know, we watched A&M, and I get Arkansas has a pretty good defense, but I'm just not impressed with that Texas A&M offense. I'm really not that impressed with Marcel Reed. Missouri's coming off a weird game versus Vanderbilt at home that they barely won. So I feel like that's maybe partially playing into them being an underdog. I think they're going to win. Michigan, also a road underdog at Washington. +115 is that money line. I kind of like that. You know, Washington has Will Rogers, but they haven't really been that impressive so far. And then finally, UCF, led by KJ Jefferson, on the road at Florida. I like them. They're -140, actually road favorite. But my only thinking that, you know, that game, I know UCF is coming off that Colorado loss, and it really didn't look pretty. But who's been there and done that and beaten Florida at Florida? KJ Jefferson. He did it last year with Arkansas. I think he can do it again. And I just think that Billy Napier is maybe a dead man walking over there. Those are my three picks. I'm just saying, I have a pretty good record so far. I definitely wouldn't listen to Mason if you're trying to take betting advice. So,
dude, my pick of the week last week was the Jaquinnon Jackson first quarter touchdown. And what happened? It hit.
All right. I mean, it's true.
I literally said as I was saying that, that I even considered like putting $5,000 on that pick. And I should have freaking done it.
Was as close to free money, I think, as I've ever seen in my entire life.
I should have done it. All right. So I'm going to take that Jaquinin Jackson and rushing touchdown plus 115. I mean, I will ride the Jaquinin Jackson touchdown pick every single week if you allow me. Did you have something to say, Riley?
I didn't.
Okay. I like UNLV minus 6.5 at home against Syracuse. Syracuse lost at home to Stanford, dude. And this UNLV team, even with whoever this new quarterback is, I don't even know his name, but what's his name?
The vibes are really strong for UNLV right now. And, you know, all the news was kind of bad, but, man, after that win, your backup quarterback slinging the rock, like, things are moving along in UNLV.
So I'm going to take the Jaquinin Jackson rushing touchdown, UNLV minus 6.5. And what the heck? I've been thinking about this one and I don't love it, but I'm going to be bold and I'm going to go SMU plus 7 on the road against Louisville. At some point, this is the proof it, Rhett Lashley. Do you want to be head coach of the Arkansas Razorbacks game?
That's fair. Yeah, so, that's fair. That was a game I was eyeing down and I was just thinking, you know, SMU's coming off. They beat Florida State, right? And I think they beat them pretty easily. Yeah, they killed them. I just feel like, I don't know. There's something about that game that kind of gives me the ick. I don't know what it is, but I mean, I don't hate the pick. It was definitely one I was considering. So
it's probably just the fact that DJU was involved in that game, just in general. That's probably what was giving you the ick. I think he got benched this week, or they're claiming it's a hand injury.
Yeah.
So. Okay, so for this game, overall, just in general, we mentioned it, Arkansas on Bet Saracen, 13.5-point underdog. We're going to give our official picks on hogbeat.com on Friday morning, as we always do. That story comes out around 9:30 every Friday morning. Our staff picks, I believe we are both 3-2 on the year now, Riley, just like the Arkansas Razorbacks are, I think. So
you might be right.
That's tough. Usually we've been better. The Auburn game kind of confused me. But not really. I just knew that if Arkansas beat Auburn, I was going to pick them to beat A&M. And we should have known that history was going to repeat itself, that we were idiots for thinking Arkansas had a shot to overcome adversity in that stadium.
I can't remember what the stat was, but it's been a long time since Arkansas started 2-0 in SEC.
2006.
So,
2006 was the last time.
It's been a long time. So, you know, banking on it to happen now for the first time under Sam Pittman, maybe against Texas A&M, who has shown a propensity to beat Arkansas a lot, maybe wasn't the best move in hindsight, but, you know.
12 out of the last 13 is what the Aggies have won in that series.
Yeah.
So, this series this weekend, Tennessee leads the all-time series 13-6, but as I mentioned, Arkansas has won the last three, and they are 4-2. Against the Volunteers in games played at Razorback Stadium. So, who knows, maybe we'll have a game like the 2020 game when Arkansas beat Tennessee in Razorback Stadium, or maybe we'll have another Joe Adams-esque punt return from Isaiah Satania or something. That would be fun, but I highly doubt it. I feel like Arkansas is going to get demolished, so we'll see. We will see. Let's move along to some basketball talk, though, because we did talk with John Calipari, and we did get some official word on some scheduling stuff. The official schedule for the 2024-25 Arkansas basketball season still not out, even though they're going to play games this month, exhibition games, that is. But the news this week that came out on Monday, the tip-off tour is official for Arkansas. So that'll be October 12th in Hot Springs at the OZK Arena in Hot Springs. And then October 13th at the Pine Bluff Convention Center. What is it going to be, you ask? Fans in attendance will have the chance for questions and answers from coaches and players. Meet and greet opportunity. They're going to do a little bit of individual drills and skill work. Maybe some 5-on-5 competition. But Cal basically said this is a good way for them to get involved, get out in the community. And they're also going to be doing some community service with Samaritan's Feet, giving out a total of 300 pairs of shoes, or 3,000 pairs of shoes, excuse me. And also, they're doing three different levels of pricing: general admission, meet and greet, and premium, which I'm pretty sure they already sold out all the premium seats for both events. And then some of the money race is going to go to Arkansas Edge, the NIL collective. So I think this is cool, man. They're going out to different parts of the state. It's not like they're going to sit and scrimmage, but I think it's cool, Riley. What are your thoughts?
I mean, I think it's great. You know, this is kind of a weird segue into the transfer portal and what it means for programs. But a lot of people complain about how with the transfer portal, it's just hard to really root for players because they didn't grow up the same way that you grew up, you know, being an Arkansas fan, really, truly being a Razorback. But I think this is a good way to get new players. You know, you got so many transfers and so many freshmen to kind of come into the program, you know, interact with the community, really become one with the people of Arkansas and do all these great things, you know, raise money for charity, whatever. You know, I think that's great. And I think it kind of helps maybe that kind of mindset of these aren't true Razorbacks. And I think it's a good team bonding experience, right? Like you got so many new players. I don't know if that's going to be a huge issue for this team anyway, just because you kind of got some continuity with the Kentucky transfers. But I mean, look, anything for charity, anything for helping people, I think is always great. Did Calipari mention that they would do, maybe you just mentioned it, a mini practice also?
Yeah, I think they're going to do something kind of like that, some sort of, you know, smaller practice, like run through some drills, stuff like that. So I'm not 100% sure exactly how that'll look, but so they got that, and then they got some preseason exhibitions. We know they're playing Kansas on October 25th at Bud Walton Arena. That should be a lot of fun. And then November 1st, they got TCU at Dickey's Arena in Fort Worth, or maybe that's in Dallas, same area. So that should be fun. Obviously, the Kansas exhibition is going to be crazy. I found it interesting that Cal said that he might, you know, they might do some situational work with the other teams. Like, hey, let's work on some zone here, because it is meant to get you guys better. Because the outcome of the game doesn't really mean anything. So
it's definitely a different viewpoint. You know, I thought it was kind of funny whenever Arkansas beat Purdue last year in that preseason scrimmage. You know, Arkansas, I thought it was pretty clear they really wanted to win that game, and I mean every team wants to win. But Matt Painter, you know, the head coach of Purdue, he went into that game with the mindset of preparing his team for the NCAA tournament and kind of preparing for the entire year. And I think he had said that they worked on some certain things, and Purdue went on and did Purdue win the national championship? They're in the final four, at the very least.
UConn won.
Well,
that.
Of course, UConn won it.
Yeah.
Purdue, I believe, was in the final four.
I think it was Arkansas. Was it a UConn Purdue natty?
I think that's what it was. Purdue made the national championship, so it worked out for them, not so much for Arkansas. And so coming into this, you know, these scrimmages, Calipari maybe kind of looking at that route, working on some things. You know, he said he's friends with Bill Self and Jamie Dixon, TCU's head coach. They might work on some situational stuff. I think that's smart. Again, with all these newcomers, kind of figure out where your team is at, figure out the baseline. And I mean, look, college basketball season, I mean, we're just over a month away. Like it's kind of crazy how quickly it's gotten here.
Yeah. It was UConn over Purdue in the national championship. So, you know, it's exciting for some people, not for everybody, but if you are excited about some baseball, the Fall Classic on Friday is coming up. So we'll be there to cover that. Are you coming, Riley, to the Fall Classic? I can't remember let's just talk about it live on air right now.
Let's just go behind the scenes. Still unsure. Okay. I will let you know.
Okay. Well, you are required to be there, but according to your contract with Hogbeat.com.
Okay.
So okay. I'm just kidding. But that should be fun. And I have a feeling, I actually know, that the starting pitchers are going to be pretty good. So I'm excited about that one. I can't get into it too much, but this team has been fun. You want to get out there. So if you're coming up to Fayetteville this weekend, I want to say the Fall Classic starts at 6. So that'll be at Baumwalker Stadium, free to the public. I think that they will have concessions. You can almost for sure bring in some coolers like you normally can in the hog pen. And so you want to get out there and watch this team. Brent Iredale is unreal. Vaheva Aloy has been swinging it. You know, his brother Kuhio Aloy has been swinging it. They got some good pitchers. Some of these freshmen are going to play. Brenton Clark. Cole Gibbler is going to play. Brenton Clark's going to play. I was told Carson Wiggins was touching 99 you know, recently. So a lot of fun that we're going to have watching this baseball team, Riley. They got to cut down the roster, man. I don't envy Dave Van
Hoyt. Yeah, that's going to be interesting. Where are they at right now? Do we know the official number?
I want to say they entered the fall with over 50, but I could be wrong.
I want to say it might have been like 54 or something like that. Either way, it's a lot, and they have to get down to 40.
Yeah.
And, I mean, there's a lot of good players on this team. So it's not going to be a situation where they're cut. Like, it's not going to be – maybe a few players might be obvious, but I think, you know, some good players might have to walk out the door.
Yeah.
Potentially.
You know, I feel like we have to mention this right now, Riley. Shout out Arkansas soccer team for being ranked number one in the country. I haven't watched them at all. I'd be lying if I said I did. I have watched them in the past. I know that Colby Hale is an elite head coach, and he's got them number one in the country. That's a pretty big deal. So we'll see if they can turn that into some postseason success.
The only times I've watched Arkansas soccer is when they play in the SEC tournament, because it seems like they've done it multiple times, and every time I watch them, they lose. So I think I'm a little bit of a bad luck. I'm just going to stop watching the Arkansas soccer team. They're number one in the country. That's great. You know, it's too bad. You know, a lot of people like to say, you know, which one's the real football? I mean, at least, you know, looking at this, it appears the soccer team is the real football team.
Shut up, dude.
Because Arkansas football is not getting it done right now.
That was probably the dumbest thing you've ever said on this show, to be honest. But they are 9-0-1, so I guess they have a tie. And then they are 4-0 in the SEC, coming off a 2-0 week. So shout out to the soccer team. You also got some women's golf, men's golf, women's tennis going on. Softball has some fall stuff going on. They're playing Missouri State on Sunday. So volleyball's going on. A lot of good stuff going on with Arkansas athletics, on top of the fact that your football team, big game this weekend against number 4, Tennessee, 6:30. Guess what? It's going to be Kirk Herbstreit and Chris Fowler and Holly Rowe on the call, on the ABC call, folks. You got the primetime game. You got the ABC game. This would be the SEC on CBS game in the past. So be excited that you get to watch your team play a competitive football game against the number 4 team in the country in primetime.
Man, if only Arkansas had won. I mean, I feel like they probably would have gotten game day over Cal. Like, surely they – I mean, if they already had Kirk Herbstreit, he's on game day. I mean, it just would have made sense. Like, I don't know. It would have made sense in my opinion, but.
Yeah. I don't know, man. It's tough. What
I just can't imagine that a crowd at California is going to be great for game day coverage.
Plus it's going to be 6 a.m. local time because they're in a different time zone.
Yeah, so true.
Yeah, it's tough. I'm trying to think. So the last time that Fowler and Herbstreit called an Arkansas game was the LSU game last year, which was a good game, right? I mean, Arkansas played against the Heisman Trophy winner and the LSU Tigers and at Death Valley in a night game and took them to the brink. One score loss. So we'll see if it can be another one score loss for the Razorbacks. I mean, I just don't see them beating Tennessee this weekend. So any final thoughts, comments, concerns, Riley McFerrin, before we let the people go?
I think we're good.
All right. Well, anything that we did not mention, we probably covered it on hogbeat.com. So hawgbeat.com is where you need to go throughout the week. Again, we did record this episode before Sam Pittman went on the SEC teleconference. So if he said something and we didn't mention it and you're like, how in the world did they not talk about that? That's why. Yeah.
Do want to very, very quickly mention it because we didn't actually say it. Arkansas made no official changes to this week's depth chart.
Yeah. So depth chart.
Depth, not death. I mean,
that's a hard word. Depth chart.
They did not make any changes. So
speaking of death, I heard that there's an NFL rule, and this is just random end of the episode stuff. There's an NFL rule that if a team has more than 5 players pass away within the same season, they can then take players from other teams' rosters, and every team has to pick 5 players that they are not willing to give up, and then that team then can choose players from another team's roster. It's like a special rule, and I think it's meant for like if there's a plane crash or something like that.
Mm.
I heard that on a podcast this week. That's crazy.
Definitely. I don't know if I'd call that a fun fact, but
an interesting fact.
No, you didn't. Okay. You didn't. I'm just saying it's not what I would call a fun fact.
Yeah.
Speaking of the NFL, the Chiefs yet again find a way to claw. Like, it's just crazy how lucky they are, man. I mean, first off, you're playing a Chargers team that's down. What? I guess Justin Herbert did play in this game. Okay.
Not going to talk about what the Chiefs are down? The Chiefs just lost their number one wide receiver, already down two of your top running backs. You can't get a freaking left tackle to play at the top of his game for anything. They are hurt. They're also hurt on the defense. And you're talking about us being lucky. We got to try to maybe trade for like Devontae Adams or something, because we're trying to throw it to Mecole Hardman and trust on him. And the ball's going through Sky Moore's hands all the time. And Patrick Mahomes is just having to throw it 60 yards down the field to Xavier Worthy to try to win a freaking game against the Chargers of all people.
you're very passionate. Travis Kelce looks like he had a good game. Xavier Worthy, you mentioned him. He had a pretty good game. Hey, how about them 49ers though? They took care of business. Finally got George Kittle back. Brandon Ayuk, I don't know. I can't remember if he had a good game. Debo Samuel is back. Things are looking up. I really need the Chiefs. I watched a video. Someone made I don't remember where I saw it. Maybe it was an Instagram reel or something about how lucky the Chiefs have been this year, and they have been lucky. How many calls have gone the Chiefs' way? And it's honestly unbelievable. And if the Chiefs win the Super Bowl again, I think I may never watch a football game. So I'm just saying.
This is like people saying that Alabama's lucky or something, or Georgia is lucky. No, they're just good. They are just good, Riley. When you win two in a row, that's not luck.
When the 49ers and Chiefs play this year, don't they?
I don't know. I don't know. We got the Saints this week on Monday Night Football.
October 20th. Kansas City at San Francisco, 3:25 p.m. Oh, yeah.
Hey,
all the marbles on that game.
I encourage you to go look at the 49ers' recent record against the Chiefs, see how they've
done. Yeah, I don't care. They're going to win that game.
They've done pretty well, haven't they? Yeah. What about in the Super Bowl games? What's their record in recent history?
All right, I'm done with this NFL.
All right, I don't know why people would want to listen to this. All right, thank you everybody for listening to Hogbeat Radio. Again, check us out, hawgbeat.com. Other than that, we'll be with you next Thursday here on Hogbeat.